Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day with a goal of informing and motivating listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on 5 regional stations, as well as 4 additional stations in Virginia. There's now a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities. We sincerely need your help to accomplish this mission. Your support of any amount is needed to take this next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support us in this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale.
Go to fcbcatjax.com and click the donate button or send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258. Attention radio. Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood.
Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for hanging in there. We're talking with Steve Zona. He is the president of the Fraternal Order of Police here in Jacksonville. We're talking about the proposed bill that's been introduced in City Council. That's Bill 2020-584. It's called a Citizens Review Board. And we're talking with Steve about the pros and the cons, what will happen if that goes through. Steve, I've got one writer that says this in relationship to that. It is, let's see if I can find that statement. Said it was like the valet parking your car, and he's wanting to question and challenge the engineer that built the car. Says the ones pushing for the Citizen Review Board are the equivalent of a group of parking valets interviewing the vehicle engineers. They have no useful knowledge, formal training, actual experience. They're simply arrogant, ignorant, blind, deaf, dumb, naive, utopian sheep who want to muzzle the sheepdog from protecting the sheep. End quote. I think that kind of summarizes what we're talking about today in relationship to that proposal. You spoke of Garrett Dennis. You recall it's Garrett Dennis and all of his wisdom that we had the shooting a couple of years back, a few years ago now at the Landing. That took place about 1:18 on that afternoon at 3 o'clock. Garrett Dennis was on the television news advocating that we need to do something to basically confiscate guns from all citizens in Duval County. That's his reaction to a shooting in the city. And here's his answer to it in a way, as I see it. And let me restate again, Steve, for your comment out of the bill on page 2 of this. I think it's about a 6-page bill. It says this Citizen Review Board would be make recommendations to the city council regarding JSO's handling of investigations or other issues of importance and determine whether any revisions or any additions to the city ordinance code or the city charter or to other legislative action is necessary to address their recommendations to the city council from the Citizens Review Board. Can you imagine the fiasco that that will cause and the pressure that that will put on police officers and the dangers that it would put them in? Speak to that, Steve, if you would, for our listeners.
So that's the spinoff effect of this whole entire thing. I mean, look, and again, I'll say it again because we're not perfect, right, and we make mistakes. But I do believe that the sheriff's office holds our police officers accountable when they need to be held accountable. So creating this extra layer of review and recommendations that's going to be passed back on to the sheriff, and you know what's going to happen is, Councilman Dennis hasn't met a camera he doesn't like.
That's right.
As these are progressing, there'll be news media there, and you know they'll be dragging our police officers, right back through the mud again a second time. And picture this, Dr. Youngblood: the sheriff's office investigates you. It takes 5 months to do the investigation. At the end of the investigation, they clear you. Let's just use an example where you're cleared, and then it goes to this civilian review board that Councilman Dennis wants to create. And for whatever political pressure or reasons, emotions, or agendas, they disagree with the sheriff and think that you should have been fired or you should have been suspended or whatever it is. And now imagine the conflict that exists there. Imagine the publicity and the news time that that's going to get. Imagine that police officer and their families, what's going to happen to them because of some politics, emotions, and agendas. It will shut down police work here. That's what the effect will have. One of the side effects it will have is, why are these police officers going to put themselves in these positions when they know they're going to end up in front of some, for lack of a better word, kangaroo court, to be judged by potentially people that have their own political agendas and emotions involved. I just think it's has no place in law enforcement. Let us be investigated based on facts and evidence. We support that. We don't care who it is. Facts and evidence are what we operate on, and that's what we should be judged by.
Absolutely. Steve, let's go back to a little what I call rudimentary fundamental prerequisite to this. And the Citizen Review Board mindset, or the modus operandi that's carried out by Garrett Dennis and those in his ilk that feel that this is necessary, they do have political agendas. They do have biases that will be brought to the table with that. But prior to that factor even coming into play, tell our listeners about a police officer, what he has to go through to put that badge on, what kind of training, then once he has the training, the continual training that's required and is necessary, and then secondly, but not subordinate to that, secondly would be how many different layers of people or organizations are police officers subject to? For example, the ethics board, the city, the police chief, i.e. the sheriff, the state attorney's office, the attorney general's office. Give us kind of a, our listeners need to understand the rigorous training that a police officer goes through, and then the requirements that he's under, and then all of the cameras that are already on him or her, and what they're answerable to.
Sure. So, I mean, just, you know, the basic law enforcement academy is longer than 6 months. And that's dictated, the majority of it's dictated by what the Criminal Justice Training and Standards Commission, what they require a police officer to learn during that time period. But on top of that, the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office adds another layer of education and training to the academy. So when they're done with the academy, then they hit the street, and for 4 months they have to ride with another police officer, which is called a field training officer. So the first month they start in phase one, and they ride with that FTO. Then they go to phase two, which is a month, phase three, which is a month. And phase four, they return to that original FTO. And that way that FTO can gauge their progression on whether they're ready, you know, after 10 months of training, over 6 months in the academy, 4 months in the training program, whether they're actually ready to hit the street by themselves. And then if, you know, obviously if we'll just go forward, assuming they are, then they hit the street. But then from that time period forward, that police officer is on probation for a year. Their probation period starts once they hit the street by themselves, and they're on probation for a year. And I'll tell you, I'm not biased. Maybe you could call me a little biased on this, but I think, you know, the training that our police officers get here in Jacksonville is second to none. I've been fortunate to travel the country and travel the state of Florida, and to watch what our police officers get, it's second to none. And I think our community is getting some amazing police officers on the street.
Yes.
But that's basically the process that they go through.
I agree. And then, Steve, if you would tell our listeners, let's just say that there is an incident that takes place, a shooting that takes place. Give our listeners the escalation overview. How many eyes does that go under? How many reviews does it already require? And who has the oversight of a police officer's activities, whether it's good or bad? How many eyes are on that?
Well, it's pretty extensive. So take an officer-involved shooting, for example. When an officer discharges his gun in an officer-involved shooting, it's basically that day an internal investigation starts. But what they do is it's called tolling. They toll that internal investigation where the department actually looks at it to see if it violated, policy or procedure. They toll that because what takes priority is basically to determine whether or not a crime occurred, you know, for lack of better words, if it's a criminal investigation. So when that happens, you have the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office, the homicide cold case team, actually responds out there to the scene. And they're the ones that do the initial investigation. On top of that, the state attorney's office sends their own prosecutor out there to conduct their own separate investigation. And at some point down the road, the two parties, the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office and the state attorney's office, have a discussion on what each investigation has shown and whether or not it's a justifiable use of force by that police officer, whether or not they need to, look at it and there's potential that a crime occurred. And that's just the initial part of it. But like I said, you'll see from time to time, it's happened here in Jacksonville. The FBI can come down and request the case file and look at stuff, and they have in the past. And the Department of Justice can come down and request the case file, and they've done that in the past. So it could be any law enforcement agency. And, again, we support that. We encourage that. We don't care what law enforcement agency it is, as long as it's done based on facts and evidence. We want them to look at it. We want it to be as transparent as possible. And what some of these radical groups are saying is that there's protections in place for law enforcement officers when they're being criminally investigated. And that's basically insane. There is nothing in place that protects police officers from a criminal investigation, whether it's, unnecessary use of force, a battery, if they call it a battery, or whether you go rob a bank, or whether you use force and it's determined to be criminal. There are zero protections in place for you. The same process is in place for the average citizen when we're being investigated for a crime as the same process that's in place for a police officer. And that's just a lie that those groups like to spread and say that there's something there that protects us, and that's not true.
Not true at all, and it's designed to demonize and to villainize the law enforcement police officers. I call them the men and women in blue, as has become known in America. And it has started with cases that have been highly tried by way of television and the liberal media. And as a result of that, there's a major falling away, as I would use the term, of those that want to be involved in law enforcement, and major numbers, as being found now in New York City, that are retiring early or retiring. And we're finding a major shortage in America across the nation for law enforcement as a result of that demonization that's taking place. But the point that I wanted our listeners to understand is, number one, we have, and I'm in full agreement with you because I'm knowledgeable of what they go through, we have a well-trained, fully trained group of men and women wearing the uniform in the city of Jacksonville. Number two, we have a major, major, major overview already of all the things that a law enforcement officer does in carrying out his duty. But yet part of this bill says it's to foster transparency. Now, that's a very nebulous term. It almost intimates that somehow, some way, there's not transparency with it. And then says to enhance communication and to ensure relationship of trust. Steve, that is simply a smokescreen, as I would call it. You may not want to call it that, a smokescreen, to make it look as though this is not already taking place in Jacksonville, Florida, with our law enforcement officers. Because, as you have said, there's already that layer after layer of protection. There's that layer after layer of investigation that brings everything to a transparent state. So what we're both saying, and what I think our listeners need to understand, it is designed to, in some fashion, denigrate the need for law enforcement. And if we continue down that track in America, and if this bill goes into effect in the city of Jacksonville, it would diminish greatly the law enforcement's ability to carry out their job. Someone said to me the other day, when I happened to be in a conversation with a former law enforcement agent about this, and he said, there needs to be a one-day event, and you can call the name of the process, I don't know, but where a law enforcement officer is trained, there's a mock city and somebody steps out from behind a building, you've got to make a snap decision. Is that a good guy or a bad guy? Is that villain or is that a foe or is it a friend? And make the decision to pull the weapon or what? Somebody said, and you may want to comment on this, perhaps Garrett Dennis needs to go through that training for just one day and he'll have a little better sense of what a law enforcement officer goes through with in the time that he's in a snap decision of pulling his weapon. That might make a total difference in Garrett Dennis's philosophy about this and how it should be carried out.
Yeah, I agree. But I think the average person, if they went through something like that, would come away with a different perspective. But I don't think it would help Councilman Dennis, because I think he he just operates on his political agendas, his emotions, and in his politics, and I think it would go in one ear and out the other. But yes, we do. We have here in Jacksonville, and I encourage your listeners to, if they want to become a part of it, the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office has a Citizens Academy. And exactly what you said, part of that academy gives them the experience you're talking about. It's the shoot, don't shoot simulator, and it's all kind of other training that we get that kind of gives people, you know, an inside look at what you can expect if you become a police officer, what's actually happening out there on the street, and gets them, a better understanding on, how to be better partners with law enforcement.
Absolutely. I would recommend that highly for our folks listening. Ladies and gentlemen, you're tuned in to Let's Face the Issues. This is Dr. Youngblood. We're talking with Steve Zona. Steve is the president of the Fraternal Order of Police here in Jacksonville. We're talking about the onerous proposed bill, 2025-84, for Jacksonville, Florida, that would put a Citizens Review Board over to do the oversight of the law enforcement officers here in our city. Steve, I understand that two city councilmen have been appointed as a subcommittee to investigate this potential. And I understand they're supposed to bring a report back in January to the city council as a whole. And let me just give you a little overview of what I've been given in written form that this subcommittee is supposed to do. Quote, to be working with some members of the Department of Justice to explore the implementation of community policing. Number two, looking at best practices that other cities have adopted with citizens review boards. And number three, with the possibility of redirecting JSO funding to foster better outcomes. Now, I don't know how you read it, but as I read that third point in particular, it means to consider how to redirect funds, i.e. defunding police. Is that the way you understand it?
Well, let me say this. I don't think you're going to have much support here in Jacksonville from the city council members. We really do have a pretty good group down there that support public safety, and it's evident by when Councilman Dennis tried to introduce his bill that I call to defund the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office. He knew it was going to die on the night it was heard, so he withdrew his bill. He wasn't getting any support from any council members on that bill. And I don't think going forward on these issues that, on defunding police or on the Civilian Review Board, I think in the end, common sense is going to prevail, and that won't become reality here in Jacksonville because the council members don't support that. I think you'll see, and this all started, Dr. Youngblood, this whole committee all started on the night that he withdrew his legislation. That was part of what he asked for when he withdrew the legislation, was a committee to look at all this stuff. So it's okay. Go look at it. I think, like I said, calmer heads will prevail in the end, and it won't pass. I don't think the city of Jacksonville's city council members or our community, quite frankly, would support anything like this.
Well, you've been villainized by WJCT News. Says Dennis telling WJCT. Dennis claimed that Steve Zona, president of the Jacksonville Fraternal Order of Police, lobbied city council members not to take up the bill. Quote, if this committee with those members want to be so close-minded that they take their cues from the union bosses like Steve Zona and from the mayor, they basically just need to turn over their elected offices to the union bosses, end quote, Garrett Dennis. But I'm thankful for people like Rory Diamond, Councilman Rory Diamond, who is on the Neighborhoods Committee and declined to open the bill up for discussion, said he doesn't believe the Citizens Review Board will ever gain traction in Jacksonville, end quote. So I'm thankful for people that will take that kind of stand and will speak to the issue as he did. I'm looking at a text message that says, nationally, the riots, the violence, and the homicides are still surging out of control, while it's the police officer who is under criticism, review, and attack on all sides. And that's exactly what we see taking place, Steve, and I'm saddened to see that. It's like some might recall it that's listening today. When our military men came back from the Vietnam War, they were demonized, they were screamed at, they were spat on, rather than being applauded and our citizens in America being thankful for the lives that had been given fully for our freedom. That was not the results, the response. And I see that taking place with our law enforcement across America. And that's what's so egregious in my mind, is to see those that put that uniform on each day, as you do, to go out and face the enemy, as I call it, and not even know if they're coming home that evening, for our safety and security and for the perpetuation of the freedoms that we so enjoy in America. I don't know what we'd do without that, as it is called now, the thin blue line that protects us from the evil world in which we're living in. Stephen, from Jacksonville's standpoint and from your position as president of Fraternal Order Police, have you seen this that is taking place on a national level have any negative effect on the city of Jacksonville with the recruitment and the hiring and the putting on of new officers? Do we have enough officers in our city? What's the answer to that, that we might build up the officer need that we have?
So as far as raw numbers of police officers, I think we're understaffed. I think any study that the sheriff has conducted, you know, by outside entities have come back and told the sheriff that he's understaffed and he needs more police officers. I think the mayor has done a good job over the last couple years in office in adding numbers of police officers to the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office. I think on the police side of the house right now, I think recruiting is still going well. They're getting the officers to come and take a job here. On the corrections side of the house, you got to remember that the sheriff's also responsible for the jail, and that's where we're lacking severely on recruitment and retainment. You know, we've been running pretty consistent now for a couple of years, over 100 correctional officers short, meaning that, you know, to staff those positions, those mandatory positions daily, our correctional officers are being mandated to work. So their days off are being canceled. Their time off is being canceled. You know, they finish their 12-hour shift and they're made to stay four extra hours, whatever it is. And that's an issue here in Jacksonville. And, you know, it's not only here in Jacksonville, it's around the country we're having agencies are having difficulty. But that's where our biggest difficulty lies right now, is fully staffing our correctional facilities. And that's not happening. We're having issues with that.
Steve, hold a moment. I believe we have a call on the line. Lady, go ahead with your question or comment, please.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Youngblood. I understand the concern for what is happening in Jacksonville, because this is affecting all of us. You realize, you know, everything, crime is getting out of control. But I'm thinking of a bigger picture of where we see our country is heading, where law enforcement is a different story, operating in a different way completely. The question is, that I have on my heart is with raising a different subject, but I would love you to hear you address it. And I'm just thinking seriously about if they're successfully preventing President Trump from doing his second term, and are we obliged to sit down and allow Biden to occupy the office as president, with all the baggages that he has and the compromised position that he is holding, which is evidence, you know, that it can be seen, but we realize that the media and they're turning away from it. Are we obliged really to go along with it and allow him to occupy the position as president of the United States when he's compromised with China, his involvement? Actually, we see it as actually selling out America already. Why would we have to sit when we have law? We still have law and order. Why no harm? No action is being taken. Nothing to make him unfit for the office. Render him unfit, whether through impeachment or prosecution or whatever. I would love you to.
Lily, I think I have a handle on your question, and you have couched it very well. And thank you so much for the call. I'll respond to that. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to keep on praying and seeking God's face that President Donald J. Trump will be our next president and will be sworn in for his second term, January the 21st of 2020. May I remind us, ladies and gentlemen, that we have been faced with a coup to overthrow our government, to overthrow the president, from the day he came down the golden escalator, as it is called, all the way through his 4 years in office. And Joe Biden is not qualified to be president. He should be prosecuted and put in prison for the treason of selling America. And yet we're in that position. But the game is not over. The battle has not been completed. And I still have faith in God and believe that God is going to put President Trump back in office for another 4 years. So we need to keep on praying that it will come before the Supreme Court. And I've said over and over, if Donald J. Trump can bring the case of treason and fraud to the Supreme Court, I believe that he will be inaugurated as the second in his second term. If he doesn't get it to the Supreme Court, we've lost. And that's a loss for all of America if that takes place. And if that takes place, we're going to see disorder in our nation and lawlessness in our nation that I believe America has never witnessed. So, Steve, I'm thankful that we've had this privilege of talking today about this. But a final thought in relationship to that, and we didn't touch on this in your introduction, but I believe recently you've had the privilege of having a special recognition from President Trump and the President's office. Tell our listeners about that.
Well, it was not from President Trump. We did have the privilege, a handful of us from the FOP leadership around the country got to go spend about an hour and a half with the president to discuss, you know, the trending law enforcement issues that needed to be addressed. So that was a privilege. But I was fortunate enough, and, you know, I'll get you later, Dr. Youngblood, for putting me on the spot and making me say this, to receive the national award for the FOP member of the year for the national FOP for all the FOP in the entire country. So it was very humbling, and it was an honor and a privilege to receive that. You know, it just goes back to how we started this conversation. That's why I got into this organization, was to you know, serve our members that wear the uniform on the street every day.
Yes, one of the major things, Steve, if I can interject this, we've got about 30 seconds before the broadcast is over. That's the reason I appreciate you and praise the Lord for you in the position that he's put you in. And that's a deserving recognition, and I'm thankful for that. So thank you for taking your time to be with us on this broadcast today. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us on Let's Face the Issues. Looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as, once again, we face the issues.
Have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, located 1/2 mile south of I-295. FCBC invites you to tune in nightly, 9 to 9:45 p.m., for expository preaching on 91.3, 91.7, and 91.9 FM. You are invited to worship with them 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study. Prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also, tune in the same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard in its entirety 9 p.m. on 100.3 FM and 93.3 HD3. You're also invited to tune in Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. on Talk 100.3 for expository preaching. Tune in and invite others to listen.